I was in Buffalo Grove first.
Buffalo Grove.
Well, when you were there, that was like farmland. It was, you know, where Lake Cook and Milwaukee Road are.
Oh.
All the way out that.
West.
Oh, but that's all built up now. That is all, the farms are gone.
Yeah.
But then I moved into Sylvan Park, the city, for the last 6 years.
Buffalo Woods was a pickle, was a pickle farm.
The last cornfield went to a Target.
Say again.
The last cornfield went to a Target, became a Target.
Probably.
It did.
I drove by a few years ago, my synagogue, it was a conservative synagogue, and I'm like, it was Korean. It's a Korean temple.
Which?
Foster Avenue.
Okay.
It's in there, it's just not coming out.
Okay.
Nay David, no.
Things change.
Things change.
They do.
Change a lot.
When I was a little kid, like 2 or 3, my mother would take me to the park with her sister-in-law and their daughter, who was my age. And there was this enormous rock that we loved to climb. And we had all sorts of fun. Went back years later and discovered that erosion had reduced the rock. We got wish time.
On the other hand, if you were that young, maybe you thought it was really big.
And it was, in a relative sense.
It was relative, yeah.
We had fun, I guess.
Well, my neighborhood had peaked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even then, it wasn't peak.
What neighborhood were you in?
Buffalo Woods. It's not, it's sort of near Foster and Lincoln in California.
Yeah.
I don't know where you're.
Like a park?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
What high school was that?
So I went to Budlong's Grammar School, and I went to Amundsen High School.
Okay.
And David and Foster.
Yeah.
It was about.
That was not Jewish.
Yes, pardon me?
That was a Jewish neighborhood.
Which one?
By Amundsen, I think it's right. I thought it was.
Oh, my God, no, no, I got penalized for taking off the. It may have changed because my neighborhood changed, so I think the ethnicities are really different. Like most cities. But I love going back. I just love going back.
Do you?
I do.
Where do you, when you go back, you visit? Do they don't live there?
Joan?
Two things.
Well, one was, I don't.
Thank you for the card you sent me. I just got it this week when I came back.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. This has exceeded my expectations.
Even better.
No, really. Real, I'm quite serious. It's really been very seriously thought provoking. I'm very
glad.
I don't do Facebook, but a friend of mine did and sent me the statement that you wrote.
Oh, right, okay.
That was really quite moving.
Glad, very glad.
Yeah. Now, before the break.
I'm very excited here, but.
Oh, you're going to start? I'll touch you later. Goodbye.
No, no.
Or I'll just leave it here. I'll just leave it. We had talked about this.
Oh, great.
What is the ROTA?
Okay.
And this goes through all the bylaws.
I'll take a look. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning, everybody. Welcome back. Good to see you all. I'm sure we will be joined by a few more people as time goes by. We are with the ethics curriculum, as you'll recall, and you may remember that we broke up, divided the ethics curriculum into two parts. Part number one, which was the content of our fall conversations, were those issues that are connected with life and death. We really explored a large range of ethical challenges that are of an ultimate variety, ultimate in the sense that life and death hangs on them. So when we were last together, we talked about capital punishment. We also talked about abortion and euthanasia and all those sorts of things. The spring semester, as we call it, starting today. The spring semester is not quite so fraught with the weightiness of life and death issues, but nevertheless extraordinarily significant because, as I indicated to you back then, Life and death issues are things which, thankfully, we don't necessarily confront on a day-to-day basis in our lives. We do confront them from time to time, but not regularly. But the issues that we will talk about beginning today are issues that do tend to be on our agenda on a much more regular basis, because they are going to relate to how do we deal with each other, the ethics of human interactions, the ethics of how we treat each other in a whole range of different contexts. So we're going to talk about the ethics of speech and the ethics of money and the ethics of how we handle our parents and the ethics of how we handle our children. All those sorts of different different issues are going to be part and parcel of our discussion in the weeks ahead, beginning today with a conversation about Lashon Hara. And Lashon Hara is badly translated usually as gossip in our contemporary context. But let's take the two Hebrew terms, right? Lashon is the tongue and Ra is bad. So it is the bad use of the tongue, essentially. That mode of speech that we utilize to tear other people down. Now, if you think for a moment about Yom Kippur, and I know we're about as far away from Yom Kippur as you can get, but if you think about Yom Kippur, and you think about the nature of what we generally confess on Yom Kippur, the nature of the types of transgressions that we confess. Thankfully, most of us are not going to be murderers, robbers, or rapists, but our sin of choice, our predilection that is almost impossible for us to avoid, we can try to minimize it, bring it to a lower level, but it's almost impossible for us to avoid, are sins of speech. We regularly transgress by the ways in which we talk about each other behind each other's backs, do damage almost unwittingly by the way we use language. And on Yom Kippur, if you look at your machzor, the prayer book we use on the high holidays, you will see that probably better than 80% of the types of sins that we confess are in fact sins of speech, because those are the ones that are seen to do damage wittingly or unwittingly, and which are the most prevalent of all. So I want to explore what the parameters of Lashon Hara are within our tradition, beginning by giving you a series of questions. Pass those that away. So I'm giving you five scenarios here, five different case studies, and you don't get to make up your own answer. You only get to select from four alternatives. So if you once you have the sheet, you'll see when thinking about the following scenarios, which one of the following four alternatives fits best. And I know that you might have a different answer than A, B, C, or D, but I want you to be ruthless and to simply choose A, B, C, or D. A is gossip, which it is wrong to transmit. B, slander, which it's wrong to transmit. And here, obviously, I'm interested in what is the difference for us in English between gossip and slander. And we'll talk more about that in the Hebrew tradition later on. C, information which there is no need to transmit, but if it is transmitted, it is harmless. And D, information which the recipient needs to know and the source has a duty to transmit. So read to yourself the five scenarios and apply either A, B, C, or D to each of the scenarios as you see most appropriate. Which one of those four characterizations, A, B, C, or D, best fits the five scenarios, each one individually? Give you a minute to do that.
Thank you.
And clearly I'm interested here in how we define these terms in English, gossip and slander. What are the parameters of these terms? I know that there are legal definitions, but we don't use them in a legal context normally. We use them in the context of our social interactions. And I'm also interested in, do we think about these terms the same way? Because if we think about these terms the same way, presumably we'll all come up with the same responses to each of these items. I doubt that will happen. Number one, you have heard a rumor that your doctor is leaving town. You have no way of being certain if this is true or not. You say to a work associate who sees the same doctor, I just heard that our doctor is leaving town. A, B, C, or D?
C. A.
Eric, A, why?
Because it's gossip.
What makes it gossip?
The fact that it's from a source that doesn't necessarily have direct knowledge. It's just that he heard, that kind of thing is gossip. I was kind of struggling between A and C, but the gossip part is what got me on choosing the A.
But what makes it gossip, according to what you just said, is the uncertainty of the source.
Right.
Uh-huh. So it's gossip because we can't know with clarity that this is actually truthful.
Right. It's second or third hand of it, right? It's hearsay.
It's hearsay from a legal context, right?
It says it's a rumor. Right.
What's the difference between that and Lashon Hara?
Or is that the noun?
Well, Lashon Hara, we will try and define a little bit more later on, but let's stick with English for right now, right? I think we have a problem with English, but you're agreeing with Eric, essentially.
Yes,
this is gossip, okay?
You could make a case for D if it's an elderly person. Mm-hmm. The preoccupation with your doctors and knowing whether your doctor is going to be around. So what this person is doing is looking for a confirmation of what he or she has heard about a doctor not being around, mm-hmm. that a doctor who serves both of them. This is something that has to be confirmed one way or another. How do you confirm it without finding some gentle way to ask someone else? There's nothing slanderous about saying that a doctor is going to leave town.
There's nothing slanderous about it, but it could be gossip or could not be gossip. Dan, you made a good case for D, but was that the best answer that you came up? That was your choice. D was your choice.
Gossip for me has a different context than different meaning than rumor.
Okay.
Gossip has something slightly perverse and malicious about it.
Uh-huh.
Whereas a rumor can go anyway.
So here we get into the problems of definition. So very good. So Dan, you're saying this doesn't constitute gossip because there's nothing perverse or malicious about it. Yeah. It just is reflecting on whether somebody's going to be in town, not going to be in town, and therefore doesn't constitute gossip and may even be in the category of information which is important to convey.
That's what I feel. Yes.
Okay.
I mean, it could be hurtful if to the doctor, if he would be losing patients, if everyone thinks he's not, if the word gets out that he's leaving town, and then you wouldn't go to him.
It could cause damage to the doctor if people start losing the practice because they assume that he's not going to be around. And therefore, what category?
Then it would be A.
A, gossip. Mm-hmm. And it's gossip because it's a rumor.
Correct.
Okay. Vicky?
I always flinch when I hear the word heard. Yeah.
Which happens about twice a day at least,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I heard this, I heard that, which usually means it's unsubstantiated. Mm-hmm. In my definition, a rumor isn't necessarily slanderous. Mm-hmm. For me, it's gossip, which is just spreading information.
So a rumor is gossip.
A rumor is gossip.
Okay.
To me, but not necessarily slanderous. Slanderous is intent to harm.
Okay. So gossip is morally neutral?
I'm not saying it's necessarily I don't believe in spreading it, the act of such, but I don't necessarily say it's mean or hurtful. Does that make sense?
It can be.
But why would you not be in the business of spreading it if it's not mean or if there's no downside to it? Why say, well, I wouldn't be in the business of spreading it?
Because it's no one's business.
So therefore, you're saying there is a downside to it, that these matters should be closely held, and because they're not closely held, that becomes negative.
No, I guess so.
Okay. Maybe.
This is so easily verifiable.
It
all
is.
All you have to do is call the office.
Yes. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Check the facts. Right.
And that's why this whole thing, I want to say, what is wrong with you? Call the office.
Right, but we don't, do we? Right? We happily hear. Oh, you do?
I live by the rule that if it's not my story, I don't tell it.
Okay.
Because I have been bitten.
Okay.
By not watching my mouth.
Okay.
So, and second and third hand is like, who has three hands anyway? So
even in a case like this, you would say you're obligated to say nothing more about it unless you check the facts.
Or I'd say, call the office. I don't know.
But it would be inappropriate to say it to somebody else before you checked.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay. Eric?
I think the problem with any kind of gossip or rumor is that it's the old telephone analogy. When you're playing telephone, it changes.
Uh-huh.
And it becomes, as it's conveyed more and more, it becomes more definitive. It becomes something that becomes the truth.
Right, but let's test this out. For a moment, let's assume that we had completely faithful transmission, where broken telephone didn't apply, and whatever was transmitted was correct. Would that make it okay?
No, I think the telephone aspect certainly makes it more
problematic.
More problematic.
Right.
And I think that the potential for that always exists.
Okay, but even absent that, you're still uncomfortable.
Well, basically, you're indicating to somebody that this doctor now at this point may not be reliable, and that person could either make a choice. They could call the doctor's office, or they could start looking for another doctor, which can harm the doctor's practice.
Right.
So if you spread it without verifying the accuracy of the information, I think you've done a potential wrong.
Potential wrong. Number two, your best friend Nina has just told you that she's pregnant. She couldn't wait to tell you. Later in the day, you were having lunch with another mutual friend. You say, did you hear that Nina is pregnant? Now, in this case, it's different from number one because you heard it from the source, right? There is nothing rumor about this whatsoever because you know this to be an absolute fact because you heard it from the primary source itself. Which is the appropriate response here,
Nina?
A. A, why? Okay.
Or maybe.
So now we're enlarging the definition of gossip, right?
Yeah, because that's very special information, and even if she's pretty sure that the two people, it's not her business to tell somebody that somebody else is pregnant.
Uh-huh. And therefore it's gossip, even though she's absolutely certain of the truth.
Well, I don't care how sure she is.
Okay.
What if she, it doesn't say it here, but what if you say to the person, are you telling people, can I spread your happy news, or do you want to be the one? I mean, I myself never tell. It's their good news to share. It doesn't mean that that's right or wrong.
Okay.
You know, maybe if you have the conversation and the person will say, oh, I'd like to tell people.
So usually people don't ask because if they ask, they might be told that they can't pass it on and they're dying to pass it on. So if you don't ask, then it's been given to you as a gift. And so let's say you don't ask that, but this has been told to you and you know it to be true because you heard it from the source.
I would never say.
But if you did, how would we characterize it? Would it be gossip?
Yeah, because you're telling somebody else's story.
So gossip is not only a rumor that may or may not be true. That's one type, apparently. But another type might be, if you know it to be 100% true, but it's not yours, whatever yours means here, it might be private, it might not. She might have told 15 other people by the time the afternoon's passed by, right? So it's not clear, it's private, but for whatever reason, it's not yours, is what we're So if I say, yeah.
Well, I'm looking at the way this is structured, and I see this couldn't wait to tell you in there. To me, that means that Nina enjoys sharing her good news with her friends, and that's why she was excited.
At least with this one friend.
Well, this one friend. Right. And it's very possible she would feel the same way about telling others, and you're taking that away from her.
Aha. Uh-huh. So the reason, so it becomes gossip because it should be hers to tell, and you're depriving her of something that she otherwise should have ownership over.
Yes, that actually happened to me.
Okay.
You know, my son's wife was pregnant. This was going to be my first grandchild, and somebody told my brother before I had a chance to tell him, and I resented it. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Right, but and I understand the resentment very well, but is it gossip?
I think gossip doesn't necessarily mean only that which you don't know is true.
Okay.
I think gossip is anything you pass on
inappropriately.
Yeah.
No, I think any time you talk about somebody, good, bad, or indifferent, they're gossip.
Yeah. That's true.
Anytime
yes.
somebody else's name comes out of your mouth and you are talking about somebody, you are gossiping.
So therefore, about 75% of human conversation is gossiping, is what you're saying. Uh-huh. I just pulled that number out of the air, but I'm guessing, right?
It's probably an appropriate number. But.
Okay, Sharon.
When I looked at it, Sharon, I picked up on a different word in that little paragraph, and what I picked up on was the word best, your best friend. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't wait to tell my best friend, and in the context, if you're my best friend, I would have a certain expectation about that relationship. And what's not, obviously not in this little snippet, telling that news to others actually could be quite harmful to the woman who's pregnant. I mean, we know the obvious example, people who've had several miscarriages, they got pregnant again, they don't know if they're going to have another, they don't want, you don't know. And so there's, to me, in reading that, there's an, I don't want to say implication, that's a little bit too strong. There is a possibility of harm to the woman who is pregnant, and also because of the best friend status. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a breach of the relationship. Agreed. Without specific permission to tell people who are not in intimacy.
And Joe, just to be specific, is it in the category of gossip? You've indicated it's bad behavior, but is it in the category of gossip?
In the way we're reading this, then I would say yes. In my view, gossip can be a true statement. Gossip can be something I made up, total mm-hmm. fantasy. Mm-hmm. Or gossip could be an outright lie, just short of slander. To me, it also gets into, is there an implication of harm to somebody else? Like, you know, quickly going back to the first one, you could, you know, with the doctor, maybe you're going to harm his patients, or what if, picking up on what Dan said, what if the person that I'm speaking to is pretty fragile and reliant on that doctor? I could be harming that person, raising needless anxiety on something that I don't know is true, completely separate from I find out that this is really true, and then this person of whom I care about want to help. That's different. That motive in there starts to get into the nuance of gray.
Okay.
I know that it's true. I know that it might help this person. So my intent is not, I have a positive intent. That's what I was trying
to say. But clearly what we're saying is that the truth is not a defense, because number two, we most assuredly have the truth, and it's not necessarily a defense against passing it on in the estimation of most people. Did anybody put anything else other than A for number two, Ronnie?
So I think that we're setting a really, really high bar here and a level of judgment that, you know, because we don't have the context, they're mutual friends. And did she also say something like, you know, I'm not sure this is public, but I'm just so excited I wanted to share it with you. I mean, I don't see this as hurtful, maligning necessarily.
And it's good news.
No more. But I think there's some flexibility here because we're coming on in such a way that 75 or 80% of our conversations probably couldn't take place.
Yeah.
No, that's just a general.
And so therefore, what response did you give?
I gave C.
You gave C.
With some caution and concern about the characters and the history and the level of the relationships.
Uh-huh. But generally speaking, if the person doesn't say, please keep it to yourself, this would not constitute gossip.
That is huge.
Right, yeah. Right. Obviously, the person says, please keep it to yourself, that's a different matter. Yeah.
Privacy value.
Yeah, I also put down C, but I stand corrected because of what was said about harm and harmlessness. I think we're having trouble with, we're getting different responses here because of something we haven't brought up yet, which is privacy and respect for privacy. If we define gossip as information passed on without respect for the privacy of others, then we end up with a very broad notion of speech limits, and as you were saying, it probably would cut out a lot of the speech that's said that's passed on these days. But privacy, if you don't respect the privacy of others, you can go on and talk about all kinds of things in their absence. We don't know whether it's going to have harm or not. That's the problem. Harm is, you know, it's a consequence which we can't really properly anticipate. So it's just best, I guess, to have a rule of respecting the privacy of others and not try to make a judgment.
Right. Although we are very adept at rationalizing that if she told me, I bet she's told 15 other people, so it's hardly private at this point.
So what?
But so what?
Yeah, there's okay. So many things you can talk about.
Number three, your male friend is seriously dating your female neighbor. You know that in a previous marriage he was violent towards his wife, a fact that he acknowledges, and this led to the breakup of the marriage. However, your conversations with your neighbor make it clear that she is completely unaware of this. You urge your friend to tell her, but he refuses. You decide that the whole thing is none of your business, and you let the matter drop.
That's a tough one.
This is a tough one. I hope they're all tough ones. Eric.
I gave that one a D.
You gave that one a D.
So did I.
So you have a duty to tell.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that the individual concerned has been given the opportunity to tell and has refused, you nevertheless have a duty to pass on what you know in this context, and that would not constitute gossip or slander.
Yeah.
Okay. Joan?
I really got torn on this one. My first instinct was, gee, you better protect your friend. And then my second thought was, how does the person who's transmitting that information, do they know whether this guy went through some kind of process to deal with whatever issues that he had in terms of that first marriage? Do we know whether there has been some character change or not in that individual? You don't know. And so it might be truthful, I think that's implied, the way this paragraph is written, I'll put it that way. There's a potential of harm both to your friend and to the man, because you don't know, you do not know.
And therefore, what's the right answer?
I tried really hard with B, C, and D, but I couldn't get over that next crunch in my thinking, so I ended up with A, gossip.
You end up with A, which would mean it would be inappropriate for you to say something, and the instinct of it's none of my business is the right instinct.
Yeah.
Vicki?
Well, in the parentheses that it says a fact that he acknowledges kind of gives me the reign of D, because if he's acknowledging it and he hasn't told her, then she needs to know for her own well-being.
She needs to know, and it's your duty, being the one person apparently who knows this reality and knows that she doesn't know, to put her in the picture. Jan.
It seems like it's a fact because it's known and he acknowledges it, and to me it's worth the risk. Like, if you lose that neighbor as a friend, it's worth the risk to protect her from maybe life or death, right? If he's that violent. So I think if you're weighing the risks and you're it would be worth the risk of telling her. Mm-hmm. But I think we also
Go ahead.
I think we also don't know all the facts. The only fact we know is that he has admitted to being violent, but maybe...
And that the marriage broke up because of it.
Right, but maybe the ex-wife was also, maybe he was protecting himself. I mean, you know, it's hard when you don't know, and I say this so often, you don't know what goes on behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes you're just told little tidbits, mm-hmm. and we're making an assumption.
Correct, but it is a reality that we never really know the full picture of people's lives,
right.
And you get this amount of knowledge and you are confronted with the dilemma of what do I do with that? So I don't think this is unrealistic, that you might only have this amount of information, mm-hmm. and have to make a judgment as to what do I do? And before people were talking about privacy, well, you're obviously, those people who are saying D are going to say, I'm going to throw his privacy overboard here because there's something more important than his privacy. We know here again that we're dealing with something truthful, right? Something is on the record and actually happened. So we're not talking about gossip in the sense of we're uncertain about the information.
Well, then it's our duty to protect her.
Mm-hmm. Duty to protect. So you're saying D. Okay, Daniel.
You've had a conversation with him about it, mm-hmm. and asked him to tell her. And at that point, if he still doesn't, then public safety. I mean, you're protecting her because you've said this is a problem. Giving him the opportunity to explain, I've been to therapy, I've gone through anger management.
Exactly.
It was a two-way street. You've given him the opportunity to tell her himself and present his best face forward, mm-hmm. and he didn't take it.
So, but if he tells you, I've been to therapy, I've been to anger management, and I don't intend to tell her anything about what happened or how I fixed it, is that okay?
No.
She has to know.
She needs to know.
Uh-huh.
She needs to know.
It doesn't matter in that context what he's done to fix himself. No. She needs to know, have the information about what happened and then how he's put it back together again if he has.
Right.
Okay.
For those people who are concerned about D, I would suggest that you exchange female neighbor to a child and see if you have a different response. I mean, because I think it's so compelling.
You mean telling the parent of the child and it's going telling
and
the child.
If a child.
A child's helpless.
Theoretically at risk.
Mm-hmm. Right. A child is helpless.
And therefore you're saying that you have a duty to protect here.
I think you do. I think you have a right to know, and then people work it out.
Right. So there are times, therefore, when speaking about what you know about somebody is not only not prohibited, but is imperative, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. Is anybody saying something other than D, Sharon?
No.
You're saying D.
I also did D. But I want to note that it seems to me the best way to handle this would be to say to, and I noted that the male is her friend. Mm-hmm. The female is just a neighbor.
Yes.
She may not really have much of a relationship
right.
with
the relationship was with the
yeah,
guy.
It's not necessarily. But I think then, in particularly in the context of that, to say to the friend, I feel compelled to tell my neighbor to protect her, because I would feel terrible if something bad happened and I knew this and didn't share it. Mm-hmm. But I would much prefer that you tell her in the context of what you have to say about that, because that would be fairer, more complete, and more appropriate.
Are you obligated to tell him before you tell her?
I think that if he's your friend, yes.
You're obligated.
I think what you do is give him the opportunity to tell her in the context of his context.
Well, you've asked him to, and he's refused.
But you haven't said to him at that point
that you're going to.
That I'm going to tell her if uh-huh. you don't, because that might be kind of compelling to him to have the opportunity to tell her in his words rather than have him hear it from someone else. And I think it would be, if he's your friend, you know, you're saying...
You may not be friends after that.
You may not, you're also giving him the opportunity to protect himself on some level, because mm-hmm. if she hears it from someone other than him, it's always going to sound worse. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone put anything other than D?
No, I said D as well.
Okay.
We are brother's keeper.
And usually when that question is asked rhetorically, the answer is usually yes. Right? Is that what you're implying?
Yes.
And therefore, you have to protect her from a potential harm that we don't even know how potentially great the harm might be, but there is a potential harm, and therefore you need to protect her.
Alert her, yes. If it were a child, then our attitude toward children is just very different.
That's a different issue.
Okay.
Yeah.
It sounds like we are in agreement mainly on this one. Number four, you are assigned to speaking in a small meeting about a colleague who nobody else present knows. You do not want this colleague to become involved with the work of this group, though you know that the colleague has a long list of expert publications in the area under discussion. You describe his familiarity with the topic as modest. Mimi.
A, because that's her opinion. This, in between the lines, I'm reading professional jealousy, maybe. And the fact that modest is in quotes. Whose definition of modest? I think she's trying to tear him down
for sure.
Anybody, you know, but before anybody gets to know him.
Yes, for sure.
I'm a woman.
So.
They.
So Mimi, it's gossip because it's a matter of opinion. When we express our opinion, that becomes gossip.
Also, the intent. Mm-hmm. We don't know, this person may not know, if this other person can contribute to the meeting.
Well, I mean, actually, it's, I wonder if it's just opinion, right? Because if this person, in fact, has, as we know, the person, in fact, has a very long list of publications in this particular area, and you expert publications, and you're describing the contribution as being, or their familiarity with the subject matter as being modest, that's not a matter of opinion, that's a matter of complete distortion.
Right?
Slander.
Which makes it slander.
That's slander.
So most people wrote B, is it what I'm assuming? Or?
I'm changing, yeah.
You're changing. Well, that was easy. Anybody on anything other than B? So the difference here between those that merited an A and those that merited a B is here we're deliberately changing the reality of somebody's record, correct? That I think is what pushes it over into the slander category as opposed to the gossip category. There is a certain reality there, and we are totally falsifying that reality that becomes slander about somebody's character. Number five, always interesting. You have been told by a female friend that she and her husband are experiencing sexual difficulties. You decide to tell your husband / wife.
A.
C.
Why
C?
Because I tell my husband everything.
Uh-huh.
I trust him, and just, you know, completely to not tell somebody else. And
so he's better than you are.
Process.
He's better than you are.
Exactly.
You tell him, but he won't tell.
He tells me everything too. And I tell people, if you don't want me to tell that, that's crazy. I mean, don't tell me. It's fine. Don't tell me.
Uh-huh. So what this question boils down to is there a marital exemption on Lashon Hara? Right. In other words, there are certain rules of Lashon Hara that we apparently think are in place with every human being on the planet, except perhaps, right? And this is the question. Except perhaps that you ought to assume that if you're telling me, that you're telling my wife as well, or telling my husband as well. And Laura, you're saying that assumption should be in place. If you're telling me, you're telling both of us.
I say it explicitly, and people know me, and they don't tell me something they don't want. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter because he's not going to tell anybody but me.
So if you meet somebody for the first time and they start telling you something that seems like it would be an intimate act of sharing, you immediately rush to say, just be aware that whatever you're going to tell me, I'm going to tell him as well. Is that what you do?
If somebody just meets me and they tell me this much,
right,
is wrong.
I don't know that they care so much. I mean, this is pretty intimate, right?
Yeah.
You either know me or you don't know me. If you tell me something, you don't know me.
Okay, so Laurie's saying there is a marital exemption on Lashon Hara. Do we all agree, Sharon?
No,
why not?
Because it's an invasion of that person's privacy, no matter who you tell.
Uh huh.
And unless there's a reason why your spouse would benefit from the knowledge, in which case
they want to know. It's
it's just a matter of gossip then.
It's gossip.
Yeah. If there's a reason why your spouse would benefit from the knowledge, then your commitment to your spouse is greater than your commitment to the privacy of this individual, whoever they are. But other than that circumstance, I would say that it's an invasion of that person's privacy to tell anybody, and the spouse is not exempt.
Uh-huh. So if a person tells you something intimate or even not so intimate, the expectation would be you don't tell your spouse. It stops with you.
Yeah, maybe it's because I don't have a spouse that I have that drive to tell my spouse things. That
right. But you can certainly imagine what that scenario looked like.
Oh, no.
So I feel like this scenario, you decide to tell your husband or spouse. It's not that your husband or spouse wanted to know. Mm-hmm. So you've decided that you want to tell them, mm-hmm. which is when you say, I tell my husband everything, it's not necessarily that they want to know anything. It's just your safety way of gossiping without gossiping.
You're processing. You're trying to figure out what this means.
I don't necessarily believe that one. Mm-hmm. I would go more with, you know, I can't tell anybody, but I know at least I can tell my husband because they're not going to tell anybody. So I can, like, so in the
Laurie,
sense...
Sorry, just a second. If you go with a processing argument, then couldn't somebody say, well, I process much better with my best girlfriend than with my husband because she's much more interesting on these subjects. So she's my exemption rather than my husband.
I only made one commitment.
to him. But the processing thing is not so much the argument. The argument is I have a unique, distinctive relationship with this individual, which makes it appropriate in that context. Correct?
Yes.
Right. Vicky,
right.
Go ahead.
Right. Unique, distinctive relation. We had a whole conversation of, you know, what should you tell your husband and your spouse and not, because, you know, does that bring you closer? Or, you know, why do you feel a need to want to tell them this?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So in a way, I do believe I agree with Sharon, because it is gossip in that what benefit is it bringing to my relationship with my husband by sharing this information?
And therefore it's prohibited. You can't pass on what you hear from other people to your spouse.
That's... Oh, I don't know. I never tell them anything, but in theory... Yes, but in reality, no. Does that make sense?
I'm no. just wondering
morals. Morals, yes, on paper, but in reality.
So you're saying that's how it should be, but that isn't how it is.
That's correct.
Got it. Go ahead.
I'm concerned about a female friend telling this other friend about her husband's sexual difficulties.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, their partner, their marital sexual difficulties, right?
All right.
So she and her husband are experiencing sexual difficulties.
Why would you say that to a friend? I mean, it creates a triangle.
I don't know.
Where the third person either stays with the friend. I mean, it creates a difficult situation where you have to make a line of allegiance.
Well, I don't know why people would say it to a friend, but they do. Yeah. So given that they do, what are you going to do with it becomes the question.
You say, I don't want to hear about your sex life.
Uh-huh. So,
it's not that interesting to me.
So
my sex life.
Uh-huh. Would there be any information that would be able to be passed on to a spouse, or would that all information be in the all gossiping
information about a spouse
information yeah. that you get as that you constant that con- if you say, look, there is a category of gossip that I don't pass on to anybody else except my spouse, then that's a way of putting your spouse in a separate category from everybody else.
Yeah.
Or you're saying no, there is this category called gossip. I'm not supposed to pass on gossip, and I don't pass it on to my spouse either. So which would it be? Gossip can be passed on to a spouse or can't be passed on to a spouse?
I'm thinking about it.
I'll get back to you.
I think, you know, you sit with your spouse, or maybe everybody has a different relationship, but I sit with my spouse at night and we debrief on the day. You know, the first thing, who'd you talk to? You know, how's everything going on? And it's just part of conversation. And when it's something that's very private like that, I would preface it by saying, and not that my husband goes
he can't remember anything anyhow. He always says, I can't remember anything anyhow. But you know, because it's not important to him, right, is the point. So if I say, I had this conversation with so-and-so today, it was so upsetting, and this is what we've talked about, and we feel, I feel terrible, whatever, and we'll both say that's terrible, and then we move on. We don't hash over and over and over about it. It's we're sharing, our relationship is elevated to a point that we can share everything. I don't know.
And therefore it's permitted.
And I think it's okay. You're taking that vow together. And
that vow to what?
To share. But first of all, it's not gossip because she told you. It's
oh, it's not gossip?
Well, all right.
So now you can tell anybody?
No. You have a special relationship with your spouse, and that's part of a marital contract.
Mm.
No.
Oh. Right.
And there's the question. Do you know that your spouse won't tell anybody else?
Oh, so it depends on your spouse. And this is based on the presumption, again, that your spouse is a much better person than you are, because you're deeply desirous of telling somebody, but they aren't allowed to tell anybody.
But it's not desirous. Right. It's not like I couldn't wait. There are some situations where I'm like, you got to hear this, and that's wrong.
Right.
But there are times when it's not that you're dying to say it. It's you're sharing something that happened in your day. This was a big conversation that happened.
But that thing that happened in your day constitutes gossip. It's not just that the 8:15 train didn't arrive on time. It constitutes gossip about another human being.
But when it's not coming from a bad place, is it still that?
Laurie, earlier on, you were saying that there's gossip that's inappropriate to transmit to other people. So why does it become appropriate with a particular person because you have a relationship of a very special nature with that person? Why does it now become appropriate? And you say it becomes appropriate on the basis that they won't tell anybody else. But first of all, people might say, well, I have a very trustworthy friend who will never tell anybody else. Why should that person not be able to do the same thing as you can, right? Why can't Sharon come along and say, I don't have a spouse, but I have a really great friend who will never tell anybody, right? And I want to have an outlet with that friend like you have an outlet with your husband. What makes it marital exemption makes sense? And I'll illustrate it the following way. So I'm a rabbi, right? And immediately say, oh, there's a professional thing here, right? So people come up to me and tell me things of a very private nature in all sorts of contexts, not just in the office, but at cocktail parties, et cetera, et cetera. I think they would be horrified to think that I told my spouse everything that I hear from every individual. And I don't tell her anything. In fact, she's usually like, how am I the last person in the community to know this, right? And to which the answer is, because you don't hear anything from me. Right. And of course you're going to say, well, that's your professional expectation. And I have the same professional expectation of my doctor. And I have the same professional expectation of my attorney and of my financial planner. And I want to know why it is that we think that all those people who hold those sort of job titles are expected to be really good at keeping things from their spouses and never pass it along. But all the rest of us, right, who don't go into those sort of job areas, we can be as sloppy as we like in these areas. All I can tell you is that within Judaism, as far as I know, there is no such thing as job categories where Lashon Hara is able to be transmitted and job categories where if you're not if you're in these, you should be more careful. So I think that if we have certain expectations that there are certain categories of people, well, I happen to believe that, and forget what I believe, pass around some texts here. just throws that away. But I happen to believe what's in line with our textual tradition here. You have some of these texts in your book, but I wanted to put them all on one sheet for you. And we'll get to the bottom line here. But Vicky, you want to jump in?
Well, my father passing away and being sick, my one of my very close friends, her husband was my father's doctor. And so the doctor is taking care of my father and sickness and everything. In the meantime, she didn't know anything. It's the exact same thing.
Right.
The exact same thing.
Right, and I am really proud if my spouse is the last person in the community to know.
Right.
Because it indicates that she didn't hear it from me. She only heard it in appropriate circumstances. I direct you on this sheet to Ben Sira, which is one of the biblical, one of our Jewish books that didn't make it into the Bible. Text number 8. Have you heard something? Let it die with you. Be of good courage. It will not burst you. Now, most of us do not believe Ben Sira, right? Most of us believe that if we've been handed something really good, then it will kill us if we don't pass it on, right? We will explode if we have to keep it to ourselves. I'm here to tell you Ben Sira is right. It is possible to receive very interesting information and to keep it to oneself. Why is it so tough for us, however, right? Why do we want this so badly? We want it so badly for a very obvious reason. If we know stuff, the more stuff we know, the better. That indicates we're at the center of the social circle, right? Right. That means that people tell us stuff, right? People go to us.
Sit quietly and listen.
We count, right? We're a somebody. So the way we indicate to other people we're a somebody is, I heard it before you. Right. I'm higher up on the social ladder, or people want to tell me first or whatever. So the part of the deep desire we have as social animals to tell other people things is to show people how important we are in the social fabric. Right. This is not new. This has been going on for centuries. But of course, the Torah comes along, Jewish tradition comes along to try to stifle our natural bad instincts. And here, this is a natural bad instinct, a natural bad instinct which actually causes harm a lot of the time. And let's take a look in the last 5 minutes we have here. Go back to text number 1 from the Torah. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. That, of course, is from the Ten Commandments, no less. And usually, when we look at it, we say, no problem. I've never testified in court, right? Or if I had, I only did it twice in my life, and I sure told the truth under those circumstances. To which the rabbis say, it can't possibly mean just that. It wouldn't have gotten into the Ten Commandments if it just meant every time you testify under oath. The most important times we testify are every single day. When we testify about each other every single day, that's why the wording here is against your neighbor, right? Otherwise, it should say you should not bear false witness against anybody, right? But it's about your neighbor. It's about the person in your community, the person about whom you're hearing stuff all the time. You shouldn't bear false witness about them. You shouldn't come and bring testimony that is somehow problematic. Now, Maimonides puts this all together for us and explains how Lashon Hara really works. Jump to text 14. And Maimonides is going to give us 3 different categories of Lashon Hara, right? Lashon Hara is sort of like the broad, overall, overarching heading here, bad uses of the tongue. What are the 3 Jewish categories of bad uses of the tongue? Number 1, what type of person is a gossip, a rechil? He is one who carries things around, going from this person to that one, saying, so-and-so said this, I heard this and that about so-and-so, even though it be true this person who gossips destroys the world. Even though it be true, this person who gossips destroys the world. How destroys the world? Because unless you can be absolutely certain that the truth you are passing on will not in any way cause damage, you are responsible for the damage it causes by passing it on. Just turn over the page to the Chofetz Chaim, who's a 19th century commentator, who gives us the bottom line commentary on some of this stuff. We'll get back to Maimonides in a second. Text 15, part 2. Any comment, even if it is not derogatory, that might ultimately cause financial loss, physical pain, mental anguish, or any damage is considered Lashon Hara and is forbidden. And if you're the one who passed it on, and it causes financial damage, right? If said doctor in case one, as some of you indicated, loses so much as one patient because you passed it on and that person decided to drop out, you're responsible for their loss. We think of all this as being, what am I? Harmless, nothing, right? I'm just talking, right? But we don't realize that often the way we talk has influence on people's conduct. And the way that influence works is it frequently causes damage, even though we might be completely unwitting of the damage we're causing. So the first question you should ask yourself when you decide to pass on what you know to be the truth is, will the passing on of, first of all, is it necessary to pass on this truth? And second of all, if I do pass on this truth, is it likely to cause damage to somebody? Because if you do, you're responsible for that damage in whatever way. Just go back to Maimonides again, text 14. So level one of Lashon Hara is the person who is a rechil, literally a peddler, a person who peddles the truth and who thinks that they're doing something okay, but is not doing something okay even though it be the truth. Level two. There is a sin, avon, much greater than this, and is included in this prohibition against gossip, namely evil speech, lashon hara. And this is one who disparages his fellow, even though he says the truth. But one who says a lie is called he who spreads an evil name about his fellow, motzi shem ra. We actually have two things tied up in this one paragraph. The first thing is, the one who disparages his fellow, even though he says the truth. Right? So you're telling the truth about somebody, but the way you tell the truth is to cast it into a bad light, right? Can you believe how much that person talks? Now, that person might talk a lot, right? But as soon as it's a can you believe question, you're going to say, well, I told the truth, right? But you're immediately shading it. By the way, you don't even have to use words like this, right? To do this, right? Just roll your eyes, sigh. One of our great defenses is we say, the less said, the better. Right? When you say the less said, the better, what you're implying is really awful, but I don't want to say really awful, but I'm saying really awful, right? All of these are ways of telling the truth while being disparaging of another, right? So Maimonides says you're in trouble if you tell the truth and it causes damage. And then level two, you're in trouble if you tell the truth and you disparage. And then level three, the end of that paragraph, the motzi shem ra, the one who spreads an evil name about somebody by telling falsehood, right? By spreading around what is not known to be the truth, right? What is, the stuff that is disparaging in one way or another. So our tradition doesn't make a distinction between gossip and slander in the way that English does. It simply says the following. You are responsible for any damage that your words might cause. And if you're responsible for the damage that your words might cause, first of all, even passing on the truth might be damaging. Right. Watch out for that. But disparaging another human being, even if you're being truthful, is highly problematic and inappropriate. And then slandering them by lying outright or deliberately falsifying their record or what they do, obviously is a level that goes one step beyond in becoming impossible. Now, many people come to the end of one of these lessons, which people looked at these texts, but come to the end of one of these lessons and say, okay, I guess I'm not talking anymore, right? You know, we just put a complete freeze on anything you might say at lunchtime, right? Because anything that normally goes on in our regular conversations, if you start examining it in this light, becomes highly problematic, to which the response is yes. A great deal of our communication is harmful, and if you think that you are not being harmed, let me tell you a horrifying fact. They talk about you just as much as you talk about them. If you think that, oh, I'm the least interesting person in the community, nobody would ever talk about me, you are absolutely wrong. Just as much as you talk about others, they talk about you. And just as much as the words that you share about others cause damage to some extent or another, the words they share about you are unwittingly causing you damage too. yes, our tradition does say it would be altogether better if you were to be able to have conversations about ethical subjects that didn't name names, right? So if you have an interest in somebody's behavior, then truly describe with anonymity the situation to the people at your table so this can never be traced to somebody else, and discuss the issue. Better still, talk about issues of the day rather than people. This is not the way that our tradition would have us communicate. Last thing before I turn to whatever comments you have. There is, of course, an exemption, right? Go back to the Chofetz Chaim, text 15. Second column there, under part 7, where it says, there is, however, an exception to the general rule to prohibit saying anything derogatory about anyone. When it is necessary for someone to know derogatory information for a constructive purpose, you are obligated to relate the information to him. For example, you are obligated to warn a person if someone is going to cheat him or harm him, but the following conditions must be met. The following conditions must be met. A, you must intend to cause benefit from relating the information. B, you must be absolutely certain that the information you are relating is true. C, you must not exaggerate. And D, you must admonish the wrongdoer before you relate the information, unless you are absolutely certain that he will not heed you. As many of you know, in America today, the only safe thing you can say about a former employee is so-and-so worked here from date X to date Y, right? Anything else you say could be problematic for you as an employer. And our tradition says that's disastrous, because what it means is bad employee who served you badly now goes on to serve next company badly and does damage because you weren't able to say the truth, right? So our tradition says there has to be the ability where there is the potential for not speaking to cause harm, for you to be able to speak, but within very defined parameters. The truth has to be ascertained, and you have to limit your remarks to the truth. You can't exaggerate. You have to admonish the individual beforehand that you're going to be telling the truth about them to somebody else. But then it becomes your duty to prevent harm to subsequent spouses, employers, clients, whatever it might be in that particular context, because you have a duty to prevent harm happening, not only to stop yourself from bringing it about, but to prevent others being put into that situation as well. Eric?
My question is, What is our responsibility when we live in a society in which Lashon Hara is occurring in the news media,
yes,
politics,
yes,
a constant?
Yes, thank you. I think that this is the critical question. I used to say 20 years ago when teaching Lashon Hara that almost everything that passes for entertainment, that is called entertainment news, yeah, is suffused with, dripping with Lashon Hara. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, basically anything that passes for news is usually dripping with Lashon Hara. Mm-hmm. We are in a society that has so far, and this is not just about our current politics. This has been developing before our current politics developed as a way of getting attention in society that is so steeped in Lashon Hara, where this behavior has become so normalized and accepted, right? I am horrified regularly by people our age who write on social media things that are extraordinary, right? Extraordinary Lashon Hara. They would be utterly prohibited by our tradition. And I think that the answer to your question is we have sunk deeper and deeper into the mire here, and as Jews we have a duty to start pulling on the rope in the other direction, but that means cleaning up our own act first.
Okay, so, but when we hear news or we hear politicians accusing other politicians of various moral,
yep,
do we not talk about it? In other words, aren't we part of the problem if we then convey the news we've heard on the news media to other people?
Yes, but the issue here is, can we discuss issues without discussing persons, right? So normally, in a healthy society, politicians are directing us to talk about issues and how we ought to deal with the issue of the day. we can talk about issues of the day without getting into the horribleness of what you think about a particular human being, that represents the challenge here. All right, let's take a break, and then Rabbi Goodman is here.
How's your father?
Thank you. I'm doing much better.